Accession number 9876, reel 13.
Mr. Dennis, reel 13. Now, both you and your superiors at brigade and corps level seem to have gone out of your way to avoid confrontation with the men of the battery. Could you explain a little bit more what you and perhaps what your superiors were thinking of?
I think it's true that officers of a regimental level, that is, those in artillery, those in batteries, and perhaps those in the brigade, all had very great sympathy with the men. And we were not feeling very sympathetic towards the higher staff. I think that tended to make us realize why the men so objected. This military business. But you say that we were obviously anxious to avoid confrontation with men, and indeed we were, because to a great extent we sympathized with them. We couldn't tolerate refusal to obey orders, but we did understand why they wanted to be left alone.
What I'm wondering is, you say regimental and brigade level, but the corps parades were cancelled as a result of it.
Oh yes. Well, I think the people on that level saw the red light perfectly clearly and weren't going to let the thing go.
Was your battery the only one involved in this?
Oh no, all the batteries were. All the batteries in the corps, as far as I know, of the infantry.
How was it sorted out in the other units? Because you told us how your unit was sorted out, but...
I don't know whether they also went on to a battery parade level. I don't know.
Did any unit actually take it any further?
I don't think so. I never heard... mind you, there was a nasty mutiny earlier on in 1917, which everybody knows about. But in these ones... I never heard of any serious trouble.
What level was the trouble at then? Well, they refused to go on parade. How did they? What did they actually do?
My ones, I suppose the others say, my ones just didn't turn up on the parade ground. They remained in their billets.
And then what?
And what happened was that I said to brigade, look here, they won't come out on the corps parade, but I was told they wouldn't. I said, I think I can get them out to a parade which I shall take.
What made you think that?
Because I knew the men's feelings were friendly to us.
Was there any other sign of mutinous behaviour at all, other than refusal to turn out, or did they just stay in their billets and...
There was no other sign that I know of.
And was there any evidence of coordination between the units? Because it seems a bit of a coincidence this all happened 1 week, or was it the first week?
I suppose that men from different units had probably told one another that they probably said this bloody Sunday morning thing, we're not coming out. Something like that may have happened.
Had you heard any rumours before
no.
that this would happen?
No, I hadn't.
Would it be fair to describe it as more passive resistance than a mutiny?
Mutiny is far too exciting a word. I mean, a mutiny involves at least rude refusal to do what an officer tells you to do. Passive resistance is a much more accurate description.
Was there any change in the behaviour of the men after? Did they realise they had a certain power over you in the sense, or did they change in their behaviour towards
you? I don't know, because I was demobilised then. I wasn't with them. But I don't think I should have heard from friends and so on if that. I think the men went on exactly the same as they'd always done.
Now, can we put a date on this? Because you were demobilised in January 1919.
I was demobilised.
When would this incident have been? In January as well?
I should say it was January.
And it was at the camp?
It wasn't a camp, but the troops were billeted all over the area. Ours were in Tourcoing and others were in Courtrai.
And it affected them in those... in both those billeting spots?
Oh yes, I think it. I doubt if it was confined to the corps I was in. I should think it probably affected other corps too.
Right, you got demobilised in January. How did that? Could you take me through the procedure of demobilisation and back into civilian life?
Well, I was told to call a brigade and be given my railway warrant and a discharge certificate, says I shouldn't be picked up for desertion. That I had an immensely lengthy journey with a train that stopped every 5 minutes to the coast, and then a sea journey which was not memorable this side, and then I had to go and report at a demobilisation centre, I think they called it, show them my discharge certificate, and they gave me some more papers I signed, and then I walked outside and I thought to myself, my God, I'm not in the army. It was incredible feeling. I could go anywhere.
And how did you set about getting back into civilian life, because you'd been up?
Well, what I did was, of course, I went to my mother and father's place, he having been invalided out from Mesopotamia by then, and then I got in touch with the authorities of Trinity and asked if I could come back, and they said good, and they and I went and I had the rest of that term, and I had the...
So you restarted in January for the winter term, the second winter term, or spring term.
Yes, I think so. With the spring term. And I had most of the summer term, I think, but that was interrupted by the announcement that there would be an examination by the civil service commissioners for people that wanted, had served in the army or the authorities, and wanted to join the civil service permanently. I went to that.
So you abandoned your degree?
Oh yes, I had to. I've always been very sorry I did, but I did.
Now, when you went back to just taking it to back into college, it's a very different life from being in the army. Did it take you long to settle down into civilian life?
I think it did, rather. I think I felt I just didn't quite know what I could do and what I couldn't do.
In what way?
Well, I think that probably, though I didn't know it, I was used to a rigidly hierarchical system where you had officially, at any rate, not actually to look up to captains and still more to majors and colonels and generals. And here I was in an unstructured sort of society, and I think I rather wondered whether I ought to regard the Dons as if they had been rather high staff officers, and of course the answer was no. They were very good to me. The philosophy tutor let me come and read him a paper twice a week, which was twice as much as most people got, on the ground I'd been deprived of my education.
Now, you went into the civil service. That is a hierarchical, although yes. It's a civilian. Yes. Do you think it was in any way you were trying to get back a structure to your life? Or was it just a coincidence?
Definitely not. I'd always thought I'd rather like to go in the civil service, long before I'd gone to the army.
Now, just one final question. Do you think that the war had any positive or negative effects on you, either physically or mentally?
I have wondered whether my deafness, which is really old age deafness, might have been a bit exacerbated or increased by having listened to so many concussions going on in the battery. They issued us all with earplugs, but we didn't use them.
Why not?
Well, because if you continue, you had to take them out, and because somebody would come and want to speak to you about something, we just found them a nuisance.
Did you get used to the noise?
Oh, yes. I got so used to it that I used to, at one point, I remember I used to have a dugout. And some very large guns used to fire over it. And I suppose it must have been a shattering noise, but it didn't affect me.
What if that's a physical effect. No. What about any mental effects? Are they positive or negative? Do you think it...
I don't think that... taking the possibility that it left me nervously, more nervous than if I had been in the war. I don't think it did. The reason was that nothing that happened to me was able to make any dent that would last for more than a few hours.
Thank you very much.